Hi, everybody. Jimmy Z here and the big Jimmy Z Weekend Spectacular. Joan Rivers said something really bad, and the political correctness crowd went absolutely nuts. Now, what she did was she made a joke about those two women that were held captive for, 10 years.
It's hard to imagine there's anything Joan Rivers hasn't done, but upon turning 80, she decided to create a bucket list, and it's taking the whole term to a whole new level.
We'll get into that in just a minute. One thing she can cross off the list, driving her daughter Melissa absolutely nuts. While living together under one roof on their WeTV reality show, Joan and Melissa, Joan knows best, Joan and Melissa, great to see you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Joan, you were just complaining when we were on the couch a few minutes ago that there's not enough business being done on Saturday nights for your show. We're here to drum that up.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
What is it like living under the same roof as your daughter? Why would you two do this?
Well, 4 years later, we're like, everyone's kind of going,
Yeah, but I'm still in the same stupid little room. I mean, those women in the basement in Cleveland had more space. I mean, it is just the worst.
We just lost out completely.
Too soon?
Okay, look, comedy is often about tragedy. And it's ridiculous for all these people to be going crazy about something Joan Rivers said. She's like Don Rickles. This is what she does. These are the kind of jokes that she makes. And I'm amazed that some people, I think that younger people don't know really who she is. The worst thing about Joan Rivers is the plastic surgery. And she even jokes about that.
You've been very open talking to your mom about her plastic surgery, which she's very open about.
Yes.
And she doesn't want me to do anymore.
No, I think at one point enough is enough and you hit a certain age. And the risk outweighs the reward. And I would actually like you to stay around for a little bit longer.
But the only way at this age I can get a man to touch me is by having plastic surgery. So it's like...
So you want to be awake?
I want to be awake and say, okay, doc, enjoy yourself. It is just...
All right, so Joan Rivers will joke, she'll crack wise about anything, including herself. She's very self-deprecating, always has been. She made a joke. It's not a big deal. So some people have been saying on Facebook, well, has she ever made any jokes about the Holocaust and everything her people went through? Because, of course, Joan Rivers is Jewish. And I posted a couple of videos. Yes, she certainly has.
Well, the hot blonde with the Aztec ass cheeks is Heidi Klum.
Oh.
Wow. Go Heidi.
Guess who's single again?
Oh, my God.
The last time a German looked this hot was when they were pushing Jews into the ovens. And it's just...
Okay, so is that in bad taste? Yeah, absolutely. Is it funny? Absolutely, it's funny. I find that... I really did laugh the first time I came upon that joke. That's a funny joke. Is it in terrible taste? Absolutely. So it was back in early 2013. I think February of 2013 is when this joke appeared on television. And then she was on HLN... which I don't know what that network, the letters are for that network. HLN interviewed her and asked her about this joke. This is the Holocaust joke.
Got to ask you about the controversy.
Of course.
That's been going on. You're very well aware of it, about a particular joke you told on E's Fashion Police, talking about Heidi Klum's very revealing dress at the Oscars. We're looking at it right now, and your joke made reference to the Holocaust. There are some people, including the Anti-Defamation League, who said your joke was offensive. How do you respond to that?
It's a joke, number one. Number two is about the Holocaust. It's the way I remind people about the Holocaust. I do it through humor. My husband lost his entire family in the Holocaust. So let's just start with that. So people, your generation doesn't even know what I'm talking about. By my doing a joke, gets them talking and thinking. And didn't bother Heidi, doesn't bother me.
And there are people who say you should apologize.
For what?
What do you say to them?
Why don't you worry about Mel Gibson? Why don't you worry about the anti-Semites out there and not pick someone who doesn't have a single living relative?
Any subject that's too serious that you wouldn't take on in humor?
I think that's how we get through life. That's how I get, you make people laugh. You laugh, you can deal with it.
Okay, so Joan Rivers uses humor to get through some of the more tragic parts of life. Many people do. I remember when I was hit by a car on my bicycle, and I was in the hospital for 6 days. It was, you know, I think if you had heard about it on the television news, they would have said it was minor injuries. Because when you hear about accidents on television, and the report is people suffered minor injuries, that's hospitalization in most cases. And so I broke my pelvic bone, and I was being all kinds of tests and observation and examinations, and I was making jokes the whole time. The nurses and the doctors were laughing because of the stupid things I was saying. And so that's how I deal with it. And so I understand what all this is about. So now we go back to the Joan Rivers joke about the Cleveland kidnapping victims.
Yeah, but I'm still in the same stupid little room. I mean, those women in the basement in Cleveland had more space. I mean, it is just the worst.
And TMZ had this on their show about this very joke.
Sad news today. Joan Rivers, who made us laugh for so many years with her edgy sense of humor, has finally gone too far! Or has she?
What is it like living under the same roof as your daughter?
Yeah, but I'm still in the same stupid little room. I mean, those women in the basement in Cleveland had more space. I mean, it is just...
Yes, obviously the joke Joan was making on the Today Show was about Amanda Berry and Gina DeJesus, who were held captive by a crazy man. So, yeah, they're pretty pissed.
They cannot believe that even though she's a comedian, someone would actually say that.
But Joan ain't apologizing. In fact, she tells TMZ the girls shouldn't complain because...
They got to live rent-free for more than a decade.
How do you not laugh at that?
Well, wait, there's more. Joan also says,
they're okay. I bet you within 3 years, one of them will be on Dancing with the Stars.
Honestly, is she not allowed to do that?
The line is the joke funny or not? If it wasn't a funny joke, you'd be like, oh, that's horrible.
There have been, like, jokes about Anne Frank.
Well, she does a joke about Anne Frank, saying that she doesn't like her because she was a whiner. Something like that.
Have there not been jokes about the Lincoln, it's like, aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
Waggity smaggity doo.
But those are also things that happened a really long time ago.
That Hindenburg, huh?
Oh, the humanity! More like Hindenburn, eh, folks? What, too soon?
And then, as if not to be outdone by herself, she made a joke about Lindsay Lohan's miscarriage. And this one is so crude, I'm not going to play it on the show. I'll go ahead and put the link in the show notes and you can check it out if you want to, but I'm not playing it on the show. It's a little gross. But this is who Joan Rivers is. She makes distasteful jokes that are most of the time pretty darn funny. I remember one time I saw her on television and she was telling a joke about a girl she knew in high school who was such a slut that she had landing lights on her belly. I love that joke. Anyway, that's Joan Rivers. I'm Jimmy Z. It's the big Jimmy Z weekend show.
Who dares enter the sacred and awesome presence of the everlasting know-it-all?
You've heard of HD radio, and you've heard of HD TV. This is HD.
Well, Lottie frickin' da!
Jimmy?
I just want to be loved. Is that so wrong?
This hour of the Jimmy Z Show is also heard on
the Planet Z Network, 405media.com, Red Talk Radio, Net Talk World, Ghost Fighter Radio, Red State Talk Radio, Pundit Press Radio, Talk Stream Live, KTFL 1620 AM, WMQL FM 105.5, Open Arms Ministry Radio, Automatic, WTSA Internet Radio, Calgary Nation Radio, and TalkSuperStation.com.
Jimmy Z.
You're listening to The Jimmy Z Show right here on KJZS and worldwide at thejimmyzshow.com.
Now, according to my schedule, you have exactly 1 hour to indulge in childish nonsense.
Hi, everybody!
Hello, my friends, and welcome. Jimmy Z, the Big Jimmy Z Show, right here at thejimmyzshow.com. Let's see. If you want to contact the show for any reason whatsoever, the email address is jz@thejimmyzshow.com. And if you want to call and record your comments for playback on the next day's show, that phone number is 714-905-9591. Now, I need to throw a load of wash into the dryer, and I hate doing that because there's going to be some noise in the background, but I can't help it. I've got to get this load of laundry dried. So give me a second. I'll break away, and I'll be right back. All right, Jimmy Z here, the Big Jimmy Z Show. And we've got a lot to get through here, so why don't we try some Jimmy Z rapid fire news and commentary? Yeah. And by the way, speaking of gunfire, I am going to the gun show tomorrow afternoon, Sunday afternoon. I'm recording at this point on Saturday. And I'm drinking coffee, of course, the official drink of the Jimmy Z Show, coffee. All right, we've got to get to it. We really do. I need to jump right in and fly through as much as we can. Some of this stuff we're going to talk about is 4, 5, maybe 6 days old. I started collecting a bunch of stuff to talk about right after the completion of the weekend show last weekend. And I did 3 daily commentaries this week. 3. Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Thursday, I recorded, I dubbed audio of the Jason Veeley appearances. I got to talk about this thing, too. And I don't have a lot of time because the show is so fast. And I'm only doing one a week. So I need to mention briefly that Jason Veeley, a good friend of the Jimmy Z Show, and the head guy in charge of Junior Factor Nation. And I don't know if he's a president or a CEO or the managing editor. I have no idea, but he's the head guy. And so that's what I'm calling him, head guy. Jason Veeley of Junior Factor Nation recorded his college professor in a creative writing class going off on Republicans. And it's spectacular, a great recording. He got in touch with a website called Campus Reform, and the whole thing went viral. He was on television with Megyn Kelly on Fox News. The next night, he was on Cavuto with a guest host, and there was a big debate there. It's great stuff. So, unfortunately, I don't have time. What is going on with my chair all of a sudden squeaking? That's why I got rid of the last chair. Anyway, so I've got all this audio, and I'm going to put it in the show notes for sure. But the reason why I didn't do a commentary on Thursday is because I was helping Jason get this. Fox News had this really bizarre website where they give you 1 minute video clips. And so we had to grab seven of those and dub them and then tie them all together. It's ridiculous. So anyway, that's why there was not a commentary on Thursday. And then on Friday, I was simply plumb tired. That was it. I was done. I got home and that was it. I've got to say, on the one hand, I really enjoy the work I'm doing. On the other hand, I still really don't like doing the show 4 or 5 days a week. I really don't like that. So I'm going to try and figure out. I got to figure out a way to get a couple more shows in. Somehow. There's got to be a way. But right now, it's only the weekend show. Anyway, so the first thing here is Hillary Clinton. Hillary's numbers plummet. Majority of Americans still want answers on Benghazi. It appears that America is already souring on the idea of Hillary Clinton before she even runs. According to the Washington Post, Clinton is experiencing the worst approval ratings she has seen in 6 years, while at the same time, the GOP brand continues to rise in favorability among Americans. Democratic pollster Anderson Robbins Research and GOP pollster Shaw and Company show a 49% approval rating for Clinton, with a 45% unfavorable. Now, this is huge. When you go under 50%, you are beatable by just about anybody. Pee Wee Herman could be running against you and probably beat you. And then, related to this, you've got Dick Morris commentary from 4 or 5 days ago regarding a CIA cover-up in Benghazi.
At last, the truth has come out about what the CIA was doing in Benghazi in the first place and the background of the raid. And it could be a truth that could prove so devastating to Obama that it might possibly eventually find its way into impeachment. Seymour Hersh, who is a big, usually left-wing investigative reporter, the guy who unearthed the My Lai massacres in Vietnam and the Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq, has published a story that has not received mainstream attention for some God unknown reason, that there is an addendum, an amendment, what he calls an annex, to the Senate Intelligence Committee report that explains what the CIA was doing in Benghazi. And apparently the whole mission was designed to take arms from Libya and ship them on Turkish ships to Turkey, where in southern Turkey they would then be given to Syrian rebels who are battling against the Assad regime. And none of this was authorized by the House or the Senate Intelligence Committee. In fact, they weren't even notified that it was taking place. That is a blatant and clear violation of law, like the Iran-Contra trade was that Reagan was involved in. Now, the CIA claims that it wasn't a CIA, it wasn't just a CIA operation, but they were liaising with MI6, the British intelligence arm. And there's an exception saying that if all you're doing is a liaison activity with another foreign service and that most of the effort is by them, you don't have to get approval from the Intelligence Committee. But that's a transparent fraud. This was obviously a CIA operation with MI6 tagging along, probably so they did not have to notify Congress. So the Intelligence Committee reports that Chris Stevens, the ambassador who was killed, was the point man, was the coordinator of this entire arms shipment. And this information raises a new perspective on why Hillary and Obama lied about the Benghazi attack and pretended it was about a video. It wasn't just that they wanted to conceal the attack to help them win the election 8 weeks later. It was also because they were anxious to conceal an illegal operation to arm the Syrian rebels. Back then, we didn't really realize that the Syrian rebels were Al-Qaeda. It's become evident since then. At that time, Hillary and Obama probably just thought they were Libyan rebels and Syrian rebels, one against Gaddafi, the other against Assad, two horrible dictatorships. Let's help the rebels take them out. And rather than go before Congress and get arms shipments directly to the rebels, which Congress ultimately rejected, let's channel it through using Gaddafi's old armaments and have the CIA do it. This casts an entirely new perspective on the Benghazi scandal, and it raises the question of whether these arms shipments were illegal or not. I asked a United States senator, personally, whether these operations had been authorized by the Intel Committee, and he said, no, they had not. And I said, if they weren't, would it be a crime? And he said, yes, it would. Now, at that time, he may not have known the CIA defense of the foreign liaison, but this is very serious. Now, for some reason, it's not been covered by the media. But what we need to do is to get the Senate Intelligence Committee to release in public the addendum to their report in which they announce this as the information about what the Benghazi operation was all about.
All right, that's Dick Morris. And you can sign up for his email notifications at dickmorris.com. And you get an email every time he puts out a new column or a new video commentary. And it's one of the best websites as far as getting new material all the time. dickmorris.com. And no, I'm not getting any money from Dick Morris. I'm telling you, his commentaries are spot on. And I've got some more, but I don't know how many I'm going to play because there's so much to get to. I want to talk about SE Cup. This is not specifically a news story, but I think these articles came out in October of 2013. And SE Cup, if you don't know who she is, she is a commentator, libertarian commentator. She calls herself a conservative commentator, kind of like Glenn Beck does. Glenn Beck actually calls himself a libertarian, but he allows people to believe that he is more conservative than libertarian. S.E. Cupp is a libertarian. She wants people to believe that she is conservative. She's on the Blase television network, or whatever it's called, the cable TV or online streaming television network. And S.E. Cupp is an atheist. Now, she argues that in a couple of articles here, and I'm not going to click on them because I've got them bookmarked. Maybe I will click on them. I should read some of it. But I'm trying not to give the Blase any of my traffic, any of my clicks, because I really don't appreciate what they do. I simply don't. I'm not a Glenn Beck fan, and I'm not a fan of the Blase. And people ask me why, and here's one of the things that the Blase will do. A big story hits. Like, let's say, here's an example I'm making up. Breitbart.com breaks a big story. Barack Obama wears ladies' makeup around the White House. What the Blase will do, and they do often, is take that story and copy, you know, three or four paragraphs from it, put a different headline on it, and they spend a ton of money advertising with Google so that when you search, you hear from someone. Somebody calls you on the phone and says, oh man, you got to see this story. Barack Obama is wearing makeup in the White House. And so you Google Barack Obama makeup White House. And the news story on the Google News search puts up the Blase article first. Because they pay for it. So they get all this traffic from articles that they did not break, from stories that they did not break. And I figured this out myself because I've researched it. And I go to where the stories, you know, the Blase will actually put the link somewhere at the bottom of the page where the story originally came from. And of course, somebody's going to say, well, you don't know that the Blase really does that. Yeah, I kind of do. I mean, I can't prove it beyond any shadow of a doubt. But when you find a top story in the news that the Blase is the number one website right at the top of the page after you do your Google search, then you look at the original article where it was, and it should be at the top. Obviously, the Blase is paying for the exposure. Anyway, so S.E. Cupp. Couple of articles at the Blase. You can read them if you want. But the first article was Why Being a Conservative Atheist is Not a Contradiction. It is a contradiction. because conservatism harkens back to this country's founding. And the founders of the, I just saw a documentary on TBN, Trinity Broadcasting, and it was on this morning on television. And they were talking about how even the founding fathers who were not especially religious, and we've talked about it here on the Jimmy Z Show before, even those founding fathers that really weren't church-going guys, they knew that this country would benefit mightily by having a faith in God and by utilizing biblical principles. So you can't be a conservative and an atheist at the same time. They don't come together. If you are an atheist, and by the way, I'm not saying that atheists are always immoral, but if you are an atheist, where do your morals come from? Where do your principles and standards come from? Well, it comes from inside you somewhere. You set yourself as the barometer. She also says here in another article that she would never vote for an atheist president. Well, why not? Why wouldn't you? If you're an atheist and you can be conservative and good for America, and again, I don't believe she is conservative. I believe that she is libertarian, and there's a big difference, and I've gone through that many times on the show before as well. But if she's an atheist, it doesn't fly that she can be truly conservative. And also, it's very important to point out that atheism is a completely irrational worldview. At some point over the course of my shows, I've played analysis from the Jesus Christ Show, where he talks about atheism, and he points out that atheism is an emotional reaction to the concept of God, usually through some kind of hurt or deep resentment, or even anger. And I don't have time to look that up now, but atheism is some kind of emotional reaction to a deep hurt somewhere. Because generally, the human being has a place inside him or her that craves knowledge and a relationship with God. So anyway, S.E. Cup says that it's not a contradiction to be an atheist and a conservative. Let's see what she says. There's some audio here. I can't think of any other situation where I would play audio from S.E. Cup. I don't like her. I don't think she is good for conservatism at all.
I know that it strikes a lot of people as odd that I could be both conservative and an atheist. To me, it never seemed like a contradiction. Like most believers, I think murder is pretty terrible. Like most believers, I agree with pretty much all of the Ten Commandments. We have the same values. I just believe that I get them from somewhere else.
So the question there is, where do you get these values and principles from? That's what I want to know. And in fact, when the Jesus Christ Show host has somebody call in who is an atheist or a non-believer and says, well, I don't need to be a Christian to be moral, or I don't need to believe in God to be moral, he always asks them, how is it, where is it that you get your morals and principles from?
So there's a lot of common ground for me. And the fact that I'm not a militant atheist who dismisses the beliefs of 95% of the world as crazy, I think, I hope, gives me a little bit more credibility on the issue.
Just because you are not militant about claiming that there is no God doesn't make you any better, doesn't make you any less, I don't want to use the word enemy, but it doesn't make you any less of an enemy of God, I'll put it that way, than a militant atheist. In fact, you might be more dangerous because you make, to some people, you make atheism look reasonable. And it's not reasonable. It's very irrational to be an atheist because you're claiming that throughout the entire universe, you know, you believe that there is no God, there is no supreme being. And the rational view would be, well, there could be. And so that would be more of an agnostic view than an atheist view. atheists do not believe that there is any God anywhere. And that's irrational. Because you cannot possibly know what the universe and beyond holds. None of us will, we can't possibly know how far the universe goes and what might be out there.
I got a master's in religious studies. I write all the time about religious issues and defend faith and religious values.
Okay, I'm not sure how this is beneficial to people of faith. Because if what we need is an atheist to defend our faith, then we're just lost. You know, you can't have a faith that is worth a crap if an atheist is defending it.
So I'm hoping that because I come at it from that sort of nuanced way, my brand of atheism, my version of atheism, it isn't the typical militant, hostile, confrontational, dismissive atheism. It really is, for me, from a place of envy and gratitude and understanding and appreciation. And I want to get to the bottom of this story. It's something that I'll always be challenging myself on. There wasn't some trauma where I wrote God off, but I think I was always curious about religion. As a young kid, I was always asking my mom to take me to various houses of worship. And I think when I was 6 or 7, I very much planned on becoming a nun. I was just fascinated by the pomp and ceremony and ritual nature of religion, and yet couldn't completely get there ever. Could not completely wrap my mind around the idea of God. And I tried. I really wanted to. It just never got there. And I went to Catholic school, and I went to secular school, and throughout all of it, that one question in my brain, I couldn't answer with God. So I decided pretty young, 15 or 16, that I just didn't believe, but that I was going to try to get to a place of greater understanding. And so that's been my project for 20 years now, both personal and academic and professional. And I won't stop with that project until I reach some answers that satisfy me.
You know, it's really not that complicated. Jesus Christ answered all the questions, and all you need to do is believe. And that's really it. That's the answer. And all of the questions that you have, and all of the troubling things that you've experienced, they all get taken care of over time. In fact, since we're talking about this, I saw a little bit of, boy, I would love to have S.E. Cupp sit down with Joyce Meyer. I think that privately, not on television, not for any kind of debate, just privately, over tea, and have a conversation. Just the two of them, two women. I'm going to play a portion of what I saw last night, Friday night, on the Joyce Meyer program. This is a great segment, and I could play 10 minutes. I'm going to keep it about 4 or 5 minutes. But this is great. This follows up perfectly with what we're talking about here, discussing S.E. Cupp. So here's Joyce Meyer, and we might as well call this Christian stuff. It's amazing. It's so amazing. It's amazing. Oh, it's amazing. I am a friend of God. I am a friend of God. Oh, I am a friend of God because he prayed. I am a friend of God. All right, this is Joyce Meyer last night on Friday night talking about America and faith, and you're going to love this.
Now, 1 Corinthians 1:19-20 tell us how foolish and completely ridiculous the world's ways are. And if you don't already know that, let's just take a look at it and remind ourselves. For it is written, I will baffle and render useless and destroy the learning of the learned, the philosophy of the philosophers, the cleverness of the clever, the discernment of the discerning. I will frustrate and nullify them and bring them to nothing. Where is the wise man, the philosopher? Where is the scribe, the scholar? Where is the investigator, the logician, the debater of this present time and age? Has not God shown up the nonsense and the folly of this world's wisdom? Now, I think that if you can't look around today and see that man's ways don't work, then you're just not looking. I mean, there is so many totally, completely, unbelievably ridiculous things that go on in our world and governments and societies and people's lives today. And God has already told us that's not going to work. But we keep trying to do it the way of the flesh, the way of man, and it just gets worse and worse and worse and worse. Honestly, and I don't say this out of any kind of pride at all, but I think I could sit down with a lot of those people and I could solve a whole lot of the world's problems in about 5 minutes. I mean, it wouldn't take a panel of experts, and you could too, because we have the wisdom of God. Now listen, here's the thing. As a born-again believer, you have options. You don't have to live off the top of your head. If you notice all the words he used there, he talked about philosophers and scholars and debaters and logical people who just live off the top of their head all the time. I don't care what we think about anything. It's what God says that matters, because God will win out in the end. It's just like ignorance gone to seed out in the world today. It's just like, just unbelievable. Let's just think about a few things here. I've written down a page full of things, just kind of how the world looks at things and what the Word says about it. The world says be greedy, save everything you can, look out for number one, which is yourself, of course, and maybe someday, with any luck, you'll have something. Take care of yourself, because if you don't, nobody else will. The Word says, don't be greedy graspers. Give a portion of all that you gain away. Care about others. You don't even need to worry about yourself, because God will take care of you. And you will also have peace and joy. You have options. Which one do you want? The world's way or God's way? Amen. Do you know how amazing it is to know what we know? We need to be praying for the world, because just to know what we know is an unbelievably amazing blessing. So many people are living in complete darkness because they just don't have any knowledge. That's why I love to be able to do what I'm doing. And I'm grateful that I am on a lot of television around the world, because everybody's not going to church, but everybody watches TV. And I'll tell you, there's a whole bunch of you right now, you flipped this program on accidentally, and you're still sitting there with your mouth hanging open trying to figure out, what is she doing? Well, she's got a strange voice. What does she think she's doing? Boy, she's an in-your-face, loud-mouthed woman. Well, just listen. Just listen. Amen? Because you know what? I've got the life that many of you want. And I didn't get it playing games with the world. I started that way, but I found out that God's ways are much better. We need to make a choice to choose God.
All right, that's Joyce Meyer with a couple of great points to consider. And I've got to start plowing through all the stuff I have here, because I'm not going to get through it if I don't step it up. And so we're going to have to hurry. This is a story at the website Christianity Today. This is about the founder of Focus on the Family, James Dobson. He received an early birthday gift, the latest, albeit temporary, victory against Obamacare's controversial contraception mandate. While the mandate's fate is largely a question of how the U.S. Supreme Court will rule on one of the biggest cases of the year, which is Hobby Lobby and Conestoga Woods, lower courts continue to rule on the nearly 100 related cases still working their way through 23 states. On Thursday, a Colorado judge granted a preliminary injunction to Dobson's organization, Family Talk, preventing it from having to provide what it believes to be abortion-inducing drugs to its employees. Federal District Judge Robert Blackburn concluded that Family Talk has a substantial likelihood of winning its legal challenge.
Ta-da-da-da.
Thank you, Nancy Pelosi. So that's good news. Very good news. All right, next up. At AOL.com, former Supreme Court Justice Stevens says that we should make 6 changes to the U.S. Constitution. And this is all about the Second Amendment. He said he was bothered by press reports about gaps in the federal government database for checking the background of prospective gun buyers. Those gaps exist because the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in 1997 that states could not be forced to participate in the background check system, and Stevens dissented from that court's 5-4 ruling in Prince versus the United States. One amendment that this former U.S. Supreme Court justice is advocating would allow Congress to force state participation in gun checks. Stevens was on the losing end of another 5-4 decision in 2008 in District of Columbia versus Heller, in which the court declared for the first time that Americans have a right to own a gun for self-defense. Well, isn't that nice? That's what the Constitution says. And it was only a 5-4 decision. I remember going crazy about that. He acknowledged that his proposed change would allow Congress to do something unthinkable in today's environment, ban gun ownership altogether. He said, "I think the chance of changing the Second Amendment is pretty remote. The purpose is to cause further reflection over a period of time because it seems to me with ample time and ample reflection, people in the United States would come to the same conclusion that people in other countries have." He's completely against gun ownership. That is former Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens.
What are you doing here?
Okay, next up, we got this story. It's kind of a local story, but this kind of crap drives me insane, so I want to get this off my chest. A bicyclist was killed by a hit-and-run drunk driver. And the woman who was, she wasn't convicted, she pled no contest. And she gets 3 years and 8 months in prison. A month after a 21-year-old woman accepted a plea deal for charges related to her fatally striking a cyclist while driving drunk, she was sentenced on Tuesday to fewer than 4 years in prison at a hearing that the victim's fellow cyclist said was bittersweet. Now get this. Listen to the details here. The prosecution of Wendy Villegas, who struck a group of bike riders on the Cesar Chavez Avenue Bridge in Boyle Heights, this is in Southern California, on September 14, 2013, has drawn intense interest in the Los Angeles cycling community. Villegas hit 22-year-old, he's only 22. She hit 22-year-old Luis Andy Garcia, dragging him several hundred feet until he was hit by another vehicle. According to prosecutors, Villegas never stopped. All right? Drunk driver and hit and run. And she only gets, and killed a man, and she only gets 3 years and 8 months. Two other cyclists were also injured in the collision. So there you have whatever the charges would be for hurting the other two bicyclists. Okay, so let's add it up. She's a drunk driver. She kills a man. She injures two more people. She flees the scene of the accident. And she only gets 3 years and 8 months. And she's never going to serve that. She's probably going to serve a couple of years, maybe less. This is not justice. At an emotional hearing that was packed with Garcia supporters, victim impact statements were delivered, including one from Akira Pena, Garcia's girlfriend, sobbing, she told Villegas that the driver had robbed the couple of their future together. Okay, look, let me say something real quick. I am not a fan at all of family members crying in court during sentencing hearings, talking about how their lives have been ruined since whoever it was got killed. Everybody knows that everyone suffers when somebody is killed. A crime such as murder, second-degree murder, manslaughter, whatever it is not made worse because people, family members, friends are missing the person. That does not mean that the crime should be that the criminal should be punished more or less severely. If somebody has no friends, the killer should still be punished in the same fashion. I know I'm getting off topic here, but this is really important stuff. And what good did it do? The hit-and-run drunk driver still only got 3 years and 8 months. Even though these people got up and said how sad they are and how they're suffering because this guy Garcia got killed. I am not minimizing the death of Garcia. It's tragic and it's horrible. And this woman should have gotten at least 10 years. At least. So I don't know. I think this is a horrible miscarriage of justice. If you can drive drunk and kill a person and injure two more people and flee the scene, hit and run, and you only end up in jail for 3 years and 8 months. Wow, that is so wrong. That is absolutely disgusting.
And that's the truth.
Okay, next up, the teen stowaway that flew to Hawaii. That is an unbelievable story. It's unfreaking believable that that kid could be up in the wheel well and survive flying at, what, 30,000 feet or whatever? Incredible. And the temperatures up there are like 80 below zero. And you can read all the stories you want. My point is that there is no way that a 16-year-old kid should not be charged after he jumped a fence and got on an airplane, a Hawaiian Airlines airplane, and stowed away and flew across the ocean to Hawaii. And there's no way that he should not be charged with something. Trespassing, at least. I mean, it boggles my mind that one of the first things officials talked about after this crime happened is that, oh no, we're not going to be charging him with anything. Why? I mean, you know, don't throw the book at the kid. He's obviously troubled, but you've got to punish him somehow. And I should point out, because we're in Barack Obama's America and skin color matters, his mother is in Somalia. And that's where he was trying to go. So he's probably an African-American kid. I've never seen his picture, but being Somalian, he's probably African-American. And that needed to be pointed out because, once again, skin color matters more than anything else in America now that Barack Obama is president. And I got to tell you, they have never published a picture of the kid. They have kept his identity secret. He's 16 years old. He stows away on an airline and flies across the Pacific Ocean to Hawaii. I think we can find out who this kid is. I think we deserve to know. All right, next up. Big Sean. I've never heard of him before. He's some kind of a hippity-hop guy. And he performed hippity-hop stuff. I really have nothing but contempt for hippity-hop and all of the performers who engage in hippity hop can't stand it. And so this guy, Big Sean, who is some kind of a hippity hop guy, hippity hop performer, actually performed hippity hop at the White House. He did rap, whatever his rap is about. He did rap music. I'm sorry, I don't want to call it rap music. Rap crap at the White House. At the invitation of Barack and Michelle Obama. It's disgusting. He's the first hippity-hop guy to perform at the White House. But it's worse. he performed his hippity-hop nonsense on Easter. Easter. Michelle, what do you think we should do with the Easter egg roll? And we're going to have the kids come here and look for Easter eggs. What else do you think we should have here at the White House?
Well, Barack, I think we should have a hippity-hop guy.
How are you doing, Rihanna?
Good, how are you?
Love y'all songs over there.
Thank you.
Like at work. You want to make sure? What's going on? Sean, you're the first rapper to perform at the White House. How does that feel?
How you think it feels?
Okay, so this douchebag, Big Sean, is getting out of a car, and the cameraman is talking to him. And the whole time he's being asked a question, and he answers, "How do you think it feels?" He's making all these ridiculous motions with his hands, like he's making gang signs or something. And he almost looks like he's having some kind of a seizure with his hands, like he's having uncontrollable spasms in his in his hands. Oh, these hippity hop clowns. So this guy performs at the White House, and I got curious, what kind of crap does he rap that Michelle Obama felt that he should be at the White House on Easter?
Yeah, Barack, we got to get a hip-hop guy. We got to get Big Sean.
Okay, Michelle, we'll get Big Sean, and he can play some hoops with me out back. So anyway, I looked up some lyrics from Big Sean, and I thought I would recite some of his hippity-hop lyric majesty for you. And I'm going to read this without bleeping it, but I'm not going to say the words. I'm going to use letters. Man, I'm chillin' with my niggas, nigga, and a couple of cool bitches. What the F you doin', bull essin'? Me and my niggas say it ain't ton. 100 pretty girlies singin' our song. Yet I kick my feet up, and you can't say that I ain't home. And I be blowing on that reefer, you can't say that it ain't strong. And she just want a long penis. And he says a vulgar word for the word penis. I put it in her mouth, and now that bitch look like a conehead. When I'm done, go ahead, what the F is this? What the F you doing, bull essin'? And there's a lot more great stuff in here. Great, great hippity hop stuff. But this is the guy that the Obamas invited to perform at the White House on Easter.
What?
Now, honestly, this is the guy the Obamas had perform at the White House on Easter. These people, Barack and Michelle Obama, are doing everything they can in every way they can to make our country into some kind of inner city hood. And I realize that some people would say that's racist. It's not. I'm not saying it because they're black. I'm saying it because of what they're doing. Inviting this scumbag. He is a scumbag. I don't care how rich he is. He's a scumbag. He's the worst of the worst. Calling women bitches, rapping about smoking marijuana, rapping about getting oral sex from a bitch who just craves a big long penis. I'm sorry, I know I'm being really graphic here, but this is the guy that the Obamas had to the White House on Easter. It makes me nauseated. It literally makes me nauseous.
I just feel nauseous, literally nauseous.
All right, I could pick out more lyrics, and we could really have fun going through all the sick and twisted and vulgar things that Big Sean is famous for. But it boggles my mind. They have no class. The Obamas have zero class. They are the freaking worst. And I can't wait until they're out of there. They are an insult to our country. They are an insult to every president who has ever resided in the White House. It's simply disgusting. It's horrible. and I'm out of words. So we go over to side two. The Jimmy Z Weekend Show continues. The cat is right here, waiting for some food or something. You click the player at thejimmyzshow.com, and we'll talk some more.
The Jimmy Z Show.
She just won a long penis.